Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Support WrestleTalk!
Give us a subscribe.
Making their way to the ring at a combined weight of undeniably sexy, hailing from London, the Wrestle Ramble Podcast!
Hello and welcome to the Wrestle Ramble Podcast. I am Ollie Davis and I'm joined by Luke Owen.
Hello, Swerf Nation, and a hello to you, Oliver Davis. How the devil are you? We're actually getting to do a podcast intro, as we didn't do one yesterday for our bonus Dominion episode.
Yeah, I thought it was a bonus thing, so, you know, they don't need the exclusive intro and outro. But I'm sorry, Pod Swafters, if you felt neglected. But in a way, you were more focused on. We can't win with that kind of content, can we?
I suppose not, no. But would you like some correspondence?
Okay.
As to this, it comes from Harry Iverson, a correspondent about meeting wrestlers.
Ooh, is this going to be a good story or a bad story?
Let's find out, because I actually haven't read it. So
that is a recipe for disaster.
So let's find out. This is from Harry Iverson. Hello, Luke, not you. I was just listening to the $10 podcast you and Ollie did, marking out over Keith Lee. So for anyone who is unaware of what he's talking about, our Ramble Club episode, which is our $10 a month Patreon podcast, we talked about meeting Keith Lee and having drinks with him in a little pub in
Bethnal Green.
Bethnal Green, thank you very much. Anyway, back to Harry. And it made me think back to when I used to work at Newcastle Airport about 2 years ago, and my girlfriend, now fiancé, were going to a WWE live event the night before I was working night shift at the airport and was unaware about that the night... blah, 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 blah. Now I've had some good experiences at the airport on night shift, like getting a box full of food brought into our bait room...
It's a bait room.
I don't know.
That's where Tyler lives.
Our bait room off the Ranger from the Foo Fighters' private jet that we'd all munched on. Anyways, I had no idea what was about to happen. I got told by the leader of my team for that night, Harry, there's a flight in tonight with about 70 people coming off it. There's a bit of a roadie, but I think you can handle them. So me being me, I just thought, oh great, I'm going to have a coach of 70 plus drunk people in from a stag do or something like that. But oh, how wrong I was. The plane came in on stand. He uses a lot of like technical terms, I think, in here, which I think as someone who just says these in day-to-day life, you're like, cool, I'll just put these in email, and it's fine. There's also, I don't think, any punctuation in this email, so it's,
cool.
It's hard to read at times.
It's like when we say wrestling lingo in real life,
yeah.
And people go, it isn't a gimmick.
Yeah.
How dare you call my charity a gimmick?
How dare you?
Just wanted to know what its unique selling point was.
So the plate came in on stand, and there was a bit of a wait for them to get off. So I asked the dispatcher, what's going on? What's the holdup? And he replied, oh, it's just the WWE lot getting off the plane, and it takes them a while to get sorted. Now me being quite a big fan of wrestling as I am, I had to sort of stand back and not panic, because I'm about to see all of these stars I see on TV. The first person to walk off is Goldust, and he asked me quite a normal question, what side doors will I be opening because airport buses don't have side doors? I was already starstruck and just fell over my words, trying my hardest not to mark out since it was 3 a.m.
What a surreal thing to happen. Was he in full gimmick, Goldust?
I don't think he always... I think that's something he just does at the arena.
No, pretty sure he travels like that all the time.
You reckon?
His pillows are a mess.
Then the rest of the wrestlers started walking down, such as AJ Styles, Kevin Owens, Big Show, The Usos. The names of them were getting on my bus. When I When I saw KO and AJ, I lost my S-word internally, but I had a job to do. So I took them where they needed to be and marked out watching them get off my bus. I wanted to fanboy, but I didn't because I thought I wouldn't have time to enjoy that. They wouldn't have time or enjoy that an airport bus driver is trying to get photos. After that, I sent Owens a tweet saying that I was his bus driver and kept my cool and not... Not only did he retweet me, he replied twice. So even though I never said anything face to face, it was still an amazing experience and totally know where you's coming from about standing with a massive grin on your face. I know it's long, but feel free to share. If you's ever get the time to share, just a sidebar, I thought one point I could make it. At one point I could make it as a wrestler and went to a training school that was led by Rampage Brown, who once Irish whipped me into the corner and had the likes of Primate there too. Safe to say I was thrown into the deep end. Anyway, happy for you to enjoy this little story. Love you, bye. That's from Harry Iverson.
And that was beautifully read, Luke.
It was awfully read. That's certainly what you're trying to get to there. It's not as easy as it looks, you see.
I don't know why this is the part of the story that stood out for me. What tour has those people on? I was trying to place this in my head. So it's after AJ Styles joins the company. Mm-hmm. So that's January 2016 onwards. However, is it the same? So that's two brands. Roman Reigns has never been on Raw.
He never said Roman Reigns.
Did he not? So he said Kevin Owens. Kevin Goldust has always been on Raw.
He said Kevin Owens, AJ Styles, The Usos, Goldust, and Big Show. Big Show's always been on Raw as well.
Hmm.
And they flew into Newcastle Airport, which means they were starting their tour, which means it was a European thing. Unless they all flew in on the same flight, of course.
Yeah, and then they split when they get there. But that doesn't make sense because I think they travel differently. Because, yeah, that they've got different tour bus schedules to go on.
Yes, so... Harry Iverson, if you are listening and you want to give us some more details, dates, times. This is what we're sort of after, really. Clothes they were wearing. What smell did AJ have on him? Do you know what he had on his long flights to eat?
Did Goldust have full makeup on?
These are the questions we'd like to know.
Did Kevin Owens pop up powerbomb anyone onto the Bluth family staircase?
Was anyone wearing Beats headphones that are wireless so they don't have to interact with people like you see footballers do when they get off coaches?
Did they leave the plane very messy?
That's a good question, yeah. Were any of them being dicks?
Was Kurt Hawkins locked in the toilet on board the flight?
How long was the drive?
How many bags were there? We can keep this going.
One last bit of email from correspondence from Niccolo Mandado.
God, the reading is just exemplary today. Can you at least make a few botches so the rest of us feel like we can read out loud?
What I've learned from this episode is I should pre-read emails before I then read them out on air, just in case I may want to just, you know... So I can read
them.
I'd imagine this is what Simon Mayo does. Like, he reads an email and then he, like, prepares himself while Mark Kermode is talking about something. So he then knows what he needs to read and how he needs to read it.
He is the best radio broadcaster I've ever heard.
He's so good at his job.
Effortless.
He is effortless, actually. Yeah, that's why him and Kermode are so good. Although I had to stop listening to their podcast.
Why is that?
Well, I started to find it was...
It's a movie podcast, folks, if you're not familiar.
Yes. And that, well, you say it's a movie podcast. It started to feel like it was becoming less about the movie podcasts. So it got to the point where it was like, of a two-hour podcast, only half an hour of it was actually movie reviews, and the rest of it was just sort of inane chat. And I get that we do a lot of inane...
I was going to say glass houses, Luke.
But we do a lot of inane chant. But we got like a 10-15 minute intro. Then it's like an hour long wrestling nonsense. And then some inane chat at the end. Which I think is more balanced than doing it the other way around. Like if it was an hour of inane chat and then 10 minutes of Raw. Like that, you wouldn't want to listen to that as a wrestling podcast, would you?
Maybe. But what's your second
correspondence?
Sorry,
could you not feel for me then while I was taking a sip of tea?
So I didn't know you were... So Luke just had a sip of tea. I was meant to reply, but...
You have to cover for me for a second.
I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to cover for your reading of emails.
As this is
and I from, like that podcast.
This is from Nicolo. Hi, Luke. I was listening to the new podcast when suddenly you started talking about Spritz. I was invited to something like that 10 years ago, not more than 50 kilometres from where I live. So this is about Aperol Spritz.
What a hipster.
Which you and I were talking about on Friday's show, because we did Dominion Preview, and then you and I went out for an Aperol Spritz event, which we could talk about in the outro, I suppose.
With our lady partners.
Our lady partners. In the area I live, northeast of Italy, it is very popular, and we consistently drink it 24/7.
Wow.
I am writing you because with Aperol, it's not only the way we drink a spritz. Just water and Prosecco is a normal spritz. Water, Prosecco, and Aperol, it's a spritz Aperol. Hang on. Just water and Prosecco, it is a normal spritz. Water, Prosecco, and Aperol, it's a spritz Aperol, but it is very popular also with Campari. Campari, that is...
That's also another orange-flavoured liqueur.
Hmm. Again, good covering while I was taking a sip of tea. I saw an opportunity, and you did not take it. We do have other not-so-popular kind of spritz that also taste delicious. The most important thing, by the way, is that our spritz Aperol does not taste like the Aperol company sells all over the world. Mm. We are very proud about it. If you, Ollie, or El Fagador will ever come near here, I'll be honoured to pay you for an original spritz Aperol. Yes, in this way. Thank you for spreading the voice to all podswafters around the world. And that's from Nicola with a little accent over the last O.
Interesting. The way he describes a watered-down Prosecco.
Hmm.
What the... Well, that's not a cocktail.
But that's what Aperol Spritz is.
That's someone cheating you out of the right volume of liquor.
You have ice and you have Aperol Spritz in there with Prosecco and soda water.
It just sounds to me
like someone's
been watering down the Prosecco.
And I'll be honest, the ones we had on Saturday, I would say were a good 80% water.
Mm. But they had...
A slide.
A slide. We haven't posted that video.
No, I was meant to put it in today's news and
I forgot.
Have
you got it?
It's on my phone. I was meant to do it in today's news and I forgot. I'll do it in tomorrow's.
Yeah, we'll do it then. Cool. Well, let's get on with the show. Well, on last night's episode of Raw, Braun Strowman was not just bullfrog splashed off a ladder through the commentator's table. He didn't just have the coup de grace and the glorious DDT hit on him. He had three guys ganging up on him for the majority of the match, and he still managed to overcome them all and win. Now, WWE not fully getting behind their wrestlers and pushing them properly is something we often criticise them for. And now we're going to sit here and say, or ask rather, are they now doing it too well, too much rather? Because there is an argument, and this was like the main criticism of the episode that I saw online afterwards. The Braun Strowman has been booked too strongly, gets that Superman syndrome where you don't really invest in his matches because there's no peril there. He's always going to win.
Yeah, it's something that I've found with Braun as of late, to be honest. I think we've talked about this in a previous video. I said the problem with using, like, picking Braun as your guy to be like Raw's tippity top guy and put the Universal title on him is that they've now booked everyone else on the show to look like no one is a competitor to him. Like,
apart from
maybe Bobby Lashley.
Brock Lesnar.
Well, yeah, okay, so Brock
he's still with them, right? He's still a WWE guy.
I think he's still on the Raw brand.
Yeah, they mentioned him. Still got the championship thing. Okay, yeah.
Broken records and stuff. So, like, it just feels like there's no one on Raw that could be a legitimate contender to Braun outside of Roman and Bobby Lashley. And then that's it, really. And it's just like, and it kind of brings up again this whole point of, like, they've only got three top guys on Raw, which is Roman, Braun, and Bobby. They're all babyfaces, and everyone else has just been kind of, like, flattened off either below Braun or just, like, towards the bottom of the card. And I think that it's booking Braun to be like this is problematic.
I don't hate this.
I don't hate it.
Yeah, and I don't think WWE have booked themselves into a corner either. I really have enjoyed Braun Strowman's work since Backlash, because before Backlash it was just him teaming with Bobby Lashley where he would get a hot tag and then he'd take out Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn. There's only so many times I could watch that play out and I was kind of like, well, you're just burying Owens and Zayn week after week. There's nothing new here. I don't buy into you more because of it, and I certainly don't buy into the heels. But then since Backlash, he's had this really nice feud with Finn Balor that I would love to see turn into an actual title program eventually, I think. And he's shown enough vulnerability in those Finn Balor matches where Finn Balor has had him almost beaten near the end, where I think Strowman's character has had enough. And this just makes Strowman look awesome. I feel like this, and it was a really fun four-way main event, I thought. Both four-ways on this episode of Raw were. It opened with the women's Money in the Bank participants' fatal four-way. And Strowman here really dominated them, but he was taken out for a portion of the match, but then he came up and it allowed Kevin Owens to sell the horror that Strowman has set up from this bullfrog splash. And I think this is necessary for what they're probably going to do this Sunday, and that is all seven men are going to have to team up and do something crazy to take Braun out.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like this was the setup for the version that works on Sunday's Money in the Bank pay-per-view.
Which is fine, but the question is, like, what do you do with Braun next?
Mm. Oh, that wasn't rhetorical.
No, it wasn't rhetorical.
You, you want an actual answer?
Actual question.
Well, so he shouldn't win Money in the Bank.
No.
He doesn't need it. If Elias wins the IC title... I mean, Strowman hasn't... Well, he has won the tag team title. I was going to say he hasn't won gold yet.
Yeah.
But he has, with Nicholas. How could
could you forget?
I think everyone has.
Yep.
That was fun.
I genuinely had. It was only like a couple of months ago.
Yeah. I think Strowman getting the IC title would be pretty decent. And then he can feud with Finn Balor that.
Finn Balor is about the only guy, because there is a spot during the Fatal 4-Way, which I did enjoy. Actually, I thought the main event was a lot of fun. I thought the women's match was much better.
Really?
I thought the women's match was awesome. Really, really enjoyed it. But like, there was a great moment during it when Finn Balor, like, and Coachman even said Finn would have got the win there had it not been for, I think it was Bobby Roode that broke it up. And like, yeah, and it was, but throughout the show, Kevin Owens essentially said to both Finn Balor and Bobby Roode, you can't beat Braun Strowman. And they went, no, you're right, I can't. Absolutely, you are 100% right, I cannot. And it's, that's my thing with Braun at the moment, is they're building it, they're positioning him as a guy who cannot be beaten. And everyone on the roster is going like, yep, nope, he cannot be beaten. So what do you then do with someone who cannot be beaten? It's not like Asuka when she had her undefeated streak and it was like, oh, will she lose her undefeated streak? This is more a case of like, or like, who will beat her undefeated streak? This is a case of like, no, who is going to survive Braun next?
It's an interesting argument, and I do agree. I also am very conscious that WWE never properly push people who are over this, and they're finally strapping the rocket to someone we very much enjoy watching, so I'm hesitant to criticize it too much in case it falls apart.
Absolutely.
But I guess the antidote to this would be, rather than all these wrestlers saying themselves, it's fine for Braun Strowman to go, I'm going to crush you, and then win, but the other wrestlers should at least think, no, I can beat you.
Exactly,
I've studied you.
Yes.
I'm better than you because I'm a better wrestler or I'm quicker. All these other elements that Braun lacks. Because just because you're a big monster, that doesn't mean you're invincible.
Exactly.
Look at Goliath.
In that famous
biblical feud.
I was about to say,
David and Goliath.
Who did he wrestle for? Yes. I know what you mean. Yeah,
I'm sure he was a WCW wrestler. Sounds like the sort of name they would have had.
Exactly, yeah. He was probably part of the Dungeon of Doom.
Mm.
Yeah. But that's kind of my thing, I think, with Braun. I really like Braun, and I really like watching Braun wrestle. And you are right. Like, it's great to finally see WWE get behind a wrestler that the fans actually like. Like, that's quite refreshing, really, in sort of this day and age. But it's... Also, you've got to kind of that thing of just like, I don't think I'm looking forward to the next Braun feud, because at the moment they're just positioning everyone as like, nope, I'm just not on his level. Or I'm not smart enough to beat him.
Yeah. I am interested in Braun. I totally get why you wouldn't be, but me personally, I'm very... I really enjoyed the Balor stuff. And to be honest...
I have missed the past two.
Yeah.
So I missed the Braun Balor match.
They had two matches.
Oh, did they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think the Like I would like to see him against Kevin Owens. I would like to see him against... Remember that Sami Zayn feud he had when the heel-face dynamic was reversed about a year and a half ago?
Yeah, but that was a different Braun Strowman then. Mm-hmm. Like, the Braun Strowman that was then was someone like, oh yeah, Braun can't be beaten. But Roman was also beating him every now and again.
And Sin Cara.
And Sin Cara, remember? So, like that was it was a different Braun Strowman then.
Was now, it Kalisto?
Oh, it might have, it was Kalisto, absolutely. Kalisto.
Sorry, I get they all look the same, these masked luchadors.
But that's like, that was a different Braun character. The Braun character we've got now is this one that is just like, get these hands, and like smashing ladders and whatnot. So like, I don't think it would work as well. Also, like, I don't think I want to see Braun Strowman beat up Kevin Owens again.
Yeah.
Because we saw it all, like, it felt for like 3 months between WrestleMania and Backlash, even though it was only 6 weeks.
So Strowman really could do with a little character flaw.
His kryptonite.
I really liked it last year when he was in his feud with Roman, and the commentators were put over how Braun is lacking a little bit of experience. And I think it was the Fastlane match last year where he went for a top rope move, and that was essentially what lost it. And they're saying on commentary, it's that lack of experience. He shouldn't have gone for a top rope move at that time. But now he does have the experience. So you need maybe that he is... He no sells to. I don't know what the kryptonite could be.
Well, I was going to say, it feels at the moment like, you know, when people who don't really read comic books say, like, well, Superman's a boring character because like, he's impervious to everything and like, nothing can beat him. But then people who actually read the comics be like, no, like, he's got all of these things here. That's what Braun doesn't really have. I know, and you are one of those people.
Well, I've never bought into that argument because I do read comics and I do read a lot of Superman.
And he is,
but there is, yeah, it's very hard to write for him.
Oh yeah, exactly. Yeah,
because.
Yeah.
He is like the least interesting of the big Justice League.
I wouldn't say he's the least interesting.
It's fine to be contrarian to a contrarian. Where does the meta stop? But so at the end of this match, this really good four way, everyone hit. So there was the Finn Balor bit where he did the shotgun drop kick and then the coup de grace. That was where it looked like Balor might have won it. And that wouldn't have been the worst thing in the world, actually, going into Money in the Bank.
No, really not.
Strowman definitely had an out with the stuff that had happened previously. But Bobby Roode breaks up. Bobby Roode hits the glorious DDT. But then Kevin Owens saves that. And then Kevin Owens he hits the bullfrog splash, but then Braun kicks out. And then which is fine because it's not a finishing move. And then Kevin Owens gets a short ladder, one of those tiny ladders from underneath the ring. And just hits Braun with it. And Braun is no selling it. But he's no selling it. And I really like this. He's no selling it in a way where he is actually getting hurt. But to sort of intimidate your opponent, he's acting like it doesn't hurt. Because as soon as he gets the ladder off him, he's sort of like holding his ribs. He even punched his ribs at one point to kind of psych himself up. Which is what Kenny Omega does a lot when he starts to like... sell too much or punch his arm if it's hurting to get it back to life.
Kylo Ren thing.
Yes, yeah. And then Braun hit a wicked and must have sucked for Owens running power slam onto that short ladder. It's definitely something to be concerned about, but right now I think it's for me, I like what they're doing with Braun.
Yeah, I'm in agreement with you. I think that there is certainly a discussion to be had about whether he's being booked, quote, too strong. But at the same time, I kind of like it.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan,
turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
So, are they promoting Money in the Bank with this opening segment, or the new WWE board game, Wrestlers and Ladders?
This is one of my least favourite things. Like, because they've done this before, where, like, all the wrestlers cut promos from the top of ladders. And it's funny, because Corey Graves, one of the first things he says was, like, I've never seen this before. And I'm like, you literally did this. Like, I'm pretty sure you probably did this last year. You certainly did it previously. But it is just, it looks dumb. Mm. I just think it looks so stupid. Because it looks so unnatural.
And orchestrated and, like, staged.
Why would you, as a wrestler, in this kayfabe world, have walked down to the ring and climbed that ladder? Like, what were you all waiting for?
Brian Alvarez pointed out on Wrestling Observer Radio's review as
well. I'm sure he loved it.
He was a big fan. Kevin Owens is afraid of heights.
Oh, yeah, but then he jumped off a ladder later on in the show. So yeah. I guess that's all dropped now.
Yeah. This was horrid.
It was.
It was really bad.
And it only got worse.
And it's like, it's a visual. Like, I get it. You want a strong visual. Maybe you take a few photos and you use that to promote the event. Because, that as a visual really encapsulates what Money in the Bank's about.
Standing on ladders. And cutting promos.
And the prizes are there. You're being facetious. But it is, like, that is a good image.
Yes.
But in practicality, if you're trying to make this a real presentation, it looks utterly ridiculous and so stagey. And just, I guess they haven't done it to defend Corey Graves. I don't know why I would, though. They haven't done it with the male and female competitors. Well,
I suppose they haven't. There is that.
And I felt that made it look more ridiculous, especially the different heights of ladders.
Yeah. The only thing I will say, what I did like about
this... ladders were in there.
What I did like about this, actually, is because it's something that you don't really see within WWE, which is almost like, it felt like these two worlds, like, colliding, the men's division and the women's division, in the ring at the same time. Like, you don't really see that. It was like the Avengers, whereas all of a sudden you're like, it's Captain America and Iron Man on screen at the same time.
I think that is hyperbole.
I'm using it as an extreme example.
Yeah.
But, like, when you got to see Alexa Bliss say, like, oh, I think that, I didn't like the verbiage, but, like, my mixed match challenge partner Braun is going to win, and they had that little cute little smile together, and then Sasha's like, actually, I think that my mixed match challenge winner is going to be, and I was like, and then Balor's like, yeah, and I think that if there's going to be a Raw woman, it's going, the wording was horrible, but the actual visual, everyone in the ring at the same time together, was quite nice.
No, it wasn't nice.
On the ladders, horrible, but, like, the women and
the women
and men in the same, at the same time, that I liked.
When they mentioned Mixed Match Challenge, I also thought, I've forgotten completely about that. Even though we'd mentioned it the previous week about SmackDown when they had an intergender tag match. I didn't hate the conversations back and forth. I quite like Kevin Owens's stuff about Braun Strowman shouldn't get... like, there should be a handicap there because he's already quite tall.
Yeah.
And so I think it was an anniversary of Dusty Rhodes' death as well.
It was yesterday,
and
yeah.
Owens had the line, a Hard Times line in there. So that was a nice.
That's nice.
Because, that all those NXT people who went through NXT feel very indebted to Dusty.
Absolutely. So there were some nice bits in this, but it just looked so horrible. And then Natalya had the worst line of all.
Oh, she's terrible. She's so bad on promos.
Because Alexa said that she's going to win even though she's hurt, and Sasha Banks was like, I actually don't think you're hurt. I think you're faking it. And then Natty was like, actually, I'm going to win, and I'm going to cash in on my best friend, Ronda Rousey. And in my head, obviously, I thought was Ivory. My friend. Mm. That's all the first thing I thought of.
It was like, as if this wasn't stagey enough already. You have to say it that way.
Yeah.
I don't know where they're going with Natalya. Well, I think I know where they're going with Natalya, but it's so obvious now, it feels like a swerve.
that she, you think she's going to win?
Well, it would dictate, and what we've all speculated on was Natalia wins Money in the Bank, Ronda wins the women's title, and then Natalia turns on Ronda and cashes in the briefcase.
It's certainly a possibility, yeah.
But this was so,
but then Natty won,
obviously setting that up. That I feel, well, if she's going to go against Ronda, she should win because you want them to look strong.
I suppose, yeah.
And usually WWE don't do that unless they've spent a lot of money on someone where
true.
They actually book
yeah,
logically.
That's very true.
It feels too obvious. But, I mean, what? So they're all just standing there on these ladders
and then just start,
silently.
And then talk, oh, right, at the start.
This is
before the promos start.
They're all just sitting there, and they're all kind of like looking off in different directions. And in my Raw review, I've said it was like the South Park Christian Rock album cover, where they're all just looking off forlornly. And then Kurt Angle comes out, and he starts to recap stuff. Why? And then, the most interesting thing about this segment...
Oh, yeah?
Baron Corbin,
as Adam Machiti put it, got an upgrade. He came out just looking so much better.
I don't know. I think it's going to take me a while to get used to this.
With shaved head Corbin.
Lex Luthor Corbin. I still like him more with the long... It's just, when I saw him come out, I was initially, hey, you shaved your hair. And then I was immediately, why did you not save that for a stipulation? Why would you ever shave anyone's hair off bald? Especially if you're a heel. If you haven't got a program to work that through.
That's very true.
You could have really elevated another guy. Baron Corbin, he's the heel constable of Raw. And he's got, everyone knows he's going bald. It was a funny chant we did
at the
London shows. So why do you not make that a part of his character? Where he's really not protective over his hair, but... It's so obvious. It's an open goal, but you just shave his head.
Yeah. For example, I am a man who is very rapidly losing my hair. I do not have a lot of it left. And we have talked, like, if we were to... I mean, we're probably not going to do it. If I ever was to shave my head, I would do it as a WrestleTalk punishment, as opposed to just doing it.
I'm never going to wax my gooch out of pleasure. But I would do it for a WrestleTalk punishment, because... And it would be quite beneficial, really. It's too much down there.
But we cannot load that.
Too much.
Cannot load that to YouTube, though, can you?
I think you can. You wouldn't get a close up. You wouldn't get the abstract close up that you see in some videos of that ilk.
Yeah, but I think even then, like, YouTube's quite, you know, sometimes it could be a bit like, we've put videos
just
up.
Just be my face.
We have put videos up with a thumbnail where someone is throwing a punch, and YouTube are going like, "Whoa, hang about, lads.
That looks violent." So, again, more staginess. That segment finishes, and we know we're going to get the women's four-way next. So that's all of the Money in the Bank lady version competitors from Raw. Natalia, Sasha Banks, Ember Moon, and Alexa Bliss. And they go to break. They come... When we go to break, all the ladders, all eight people still in the ring. We come back from break. It's just three of those lady members. So they got rid of the ladders, the men, and Alexa Bliss. Because Alexa Bliss had to then make her entrance.
Yeah, I know. Alexa makes her entrance. ... Again? Like, it was... I don't know. And the commentator going like, Alexa had to get a special entrance in. I'm like, why? Why did she?
Because she's losing? And that somehow protects her? I don't know. It was very bizarre. And it just looks stupid if you're paying attention. I think WWE really does book their shows as if it's background viewing.
Hmm.
Whereas people like us, and I imagine the people who are watching this video, as fellow Ramblers, SWAF Nation members, they do watch this stuff very closely, and it's very patronising to see it like this.
Yeah, but maybe you're just being a nitpick.
Hey, there's always that as well. But, like you said, this was your favourite match on the show.
I really enjoyed this. I thought this was a cracking little match. It got really, really great by the end. It was just full of really great spots. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I thought all the girls worked really hard. And, like, Ember Moon's flying through the ropes. Crikey O'Reilly. So, like, Sasha Banks does, this awkward-looking flip-dive thing where it essentially looked like she fell over. But at the same time, like, she managed to pull it off.
Falling with style, Woody would put it.
Buzz, you mean? Oh, no, you're right. Woody would say he's falling with style. I do apologise. And then Buzz says it at the end of the film. So I was half right, from a certain point of view, as the Attitude Era podcast would say. And the point I was making. So anyway, so Sasha does this big flip dive, sort of big. And then Ember launches herself through the ropes, just like 150 miles an hour, just flies through the ropes and just like throws herself into Sasha, and they just crash into the barricade. Looked awesome.
Watching Stardom. That's what I got from that. But I guess she's always done those kinds of dives.
She has, yeah. But I just thought it was really cool. I just thought everything in this was really well done.
Mm. Particularly from Ember Moon and Banks.
Yes.
I really enjoyed their work. And I with a heel Sasha Banks against a face Ember Moon, that could be a really good feud. And I know I've said I'm a bit ambivalent towards Moon in the past. I still kind of am. But she's winning me over with her in-ring work.
I've always liked Ember Moon. I don't know what her character is, apart from the fact she likes Dungeons and Dragons.
Contact lenses.
Yep, which makes me like her anyway. But I just think that she's really great.
And Natalia won this by tapping out the entrance, Alexa Bliss. Yeah. Maybe that's what she should be billed as. the entrance.
So what's Mandy Rose? The stunning Mandy Rose.
She's the stunning Mandy
so
Rose.
So she's the entrance Alexa Bliss. Very nice.
Natalia winning there, even though she was also selling her knee injury, could be, usually the theory is if you lose on the go home show, if you win on the go home show, you lose at the pay-per-view. Statistically, that's not actually true. Like, it's actually under 50%, so it doesn't give anything away, but that's the mindset. But I feel like this was, they're giving Natalia a win because they're booking her strongly to eventually lose to Ronda.
Perhaps, yeah. Did you see, the Natalia action figure that came with the Money in the Bank briefcase, which a lot of people were like, that's probably a big indication. Did you see there was a Becky Lynch one as well?
Well, there were briefcases for everyone.
Was it briefcases for everyone?
Briefcase for you! Briefcase for you, yeah. The basic 78 series, or most of these little series of Mattel action figures, they come with variants.
Oh, I see.
So, like, The Rock also had a Money in the Bank briefcase.
Well, so he's winning on Sunday.
Yeah, a lot of people are winning, even people who aren't in the Money in the Bank match.
New Day are going to reveal their new fourth member, The Rock, and he's going to win it.
Because they need more charisma, don't they? That'd be too much.
It's just what they're lacking. It's just what they're really missing.
Next up, we had Kevin Owens approaching Finn Balor backstage, and this was the running narrative throughout the night of Owens trying to get his fellow male Money in the Bank Raw participants to gang up on Braun Strowman in the main event.
Yeah, Kevin Owens offered Finn Balor a bowl of olives because it's an olive branch, so to speak. And he points that they're both former Universal Champions who never got their rematches.
Yes, yeah. I like that
because
that is a sort of glaring hole in WWE continuity. I've just written here, what about Sami Zayn?
Well, yeah, okay, so this isn't, yeah.
No disqualifications on a Fatal 4-Way.
No, and also, like, when we saw Raw in London, it was the main event triple threat, and during that show, I thought, like, I guess they've just dropped that Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn friendship thing because they're now in two different storylines. And then Sami helped Kevin win the main event so he could qualify for Money in the Bank. And that's never been brought up again since.
Well, it was, Bobby Lashley was also in that match, so Sami took out Lashley. And you've got the Lashley Zayn feud. You can't have feuds crossing over, Luke.
Sorry, my mistake.
People will get confused because nobody watches these programs with their full undivided attention.
No, they're checking Twitter.
They're cooking. They're making stuff with the kids.
Yeah, absolutely.
They're on the phone.
It was also at this point as well that Owens, and it kind of ties into what we were talking about at the start. Owens said, in so many words, if Braun wins and cashes in, we may never be champion again.
Yeah. I like how Owens is really terrified of Strowman.
As well he should be. He's a terrifying man.
Then we got Mac and Dolph beating Breezango.
I mean, what do we want to talk about? Wrestlers getting new looks. Tyler Breeze with his beard.
Yeah, he's gone Hulk Hogan.
Yes. I was like, that's my first note. Very beardy Tyler.
And Fandango had his hair pinned up in a way where it looked like it was short. And I was thinking, what's going on here? It's haircutter mania. Cutting promos, cutting hair more like. Nice. So this was Mac and Dolph trying to get some momentum back after they were eliminated first in the Battle Royal last week, which was just full of jobber teams, and it was to become the new number one contenders. Of course, B-Team won that, and Mac and Dolph were eliminated first.
Yes.
When it happened, I was kind of hoping, for me, how I view this, that I would see it as just a throwaway thing and Mac and Dolph would be fine the next week. When they came out, they weren't as cool as they were before that Battle Royal elimination.
It doesn't help as well when Coach is now calling them the D&D train.
Did he?
Yeah, that's his new name for them. The D&D train, and you all need to get aboard.
Oh, God's sake. Not Coachman's only bad call of the night. When is it ever? But they quickly beat Breezango here. Drew powerbombed Tyler Breeze onto Fandango's back.
That looked awesome.
Yeah. And I mean, their in-ring wrestling is really, really good together, the way they combine the movesets. But then they cut a promo afterwards about how they're going to... The only way to save this tag division is to take out every single team in it. So why don't they beat up Breezango more here and fully write them off TV? Mm. It's going to take, you know, the last week and the Battle Royal didn't kill them, but it has not done them any favours.
No, as we said last week, you didn't need to put them in there. In fact, actually, it would have been more beneficial to them as characters to not put them in there, because as you said last week, Mac and Dove could have cut the promo this week of just like, we weren't even allowed to be in the Tag Team Battle Royal because they'd know we would just destroy everyone and win.
Or maybe they see it as a joke.
We're being held back. Or yeah, they see it as a joke.
And so we're excusing ourselves from this... You know, this whatever this is, we're going to destroy each and every one of you, and then we're coming for the titles.
Totally.
Alas. Brock Lesnar is the new longest reigning top champion in the modern era in WWE.
Yep.
435 days.
I'm sure this will not spark discussions about whether it counts because it's a different title.
Mm. And CM Punk... confirmed return, right, I guess?
Because
he was the last one. This is obviously to set up a feud between the two.
Is that where we're going?
Return confirmed.
He lost against Michael Jackson on purpose. So that he could come back.
So after this, we got Roman Reigns taking on Jinder Mahal. At least at first, that's what it was billed as.
A bit worried about that.
This was announced earlier in the day, and I just thought, oh my God, of all the matches to put on both Money in the Bank and on Raw, you've gone for this. We're going to see this matchup twice in 6 days. We just watched Dominion, and now we're getting this. But that wasn't what they were going to do. Jinder actually had a nice little swerve where Roman came down to the ring and said, I never said you were facing me. I said you were, which WWE's promotion team really should have picked up on.
Yeah, well, I think what it was is that Jinder laid out the challenge to Roman, and Roman accepted, and then the marketing team and the graphics team assumed that Jinder meant himself, as did Roman.
Mm.
And then Jinder probably was backstage telling everyone, like, yeah, it's me. Yeah, you know, make sure we do this, and put that in the running order. And then in the actual ring, he said, ah, no, it's not me. You, in fact, are going to face another great Indian wrestler, the great... Sunil Singh, which I thought was a really nice touch.
That was the only good thing about this.
Yes.
And he even did like one that towers above everyone else. And I thought, oh my God, are they actually bringing back? There's no way they can do this now. And then he said, Sunil Singh. I was like, you've worked me, Jinder.
Very good.
Well played.
Who was it last week that said the winds are changing? Or there's going. Or the
that
winds
was Jinder.
Was it Jinder?
Yeah, yeah.
Because he said it again this week.
That's said
his
that
new character.
It feels like it's building towards a big impending storm.
Yes.
But nope.
Well, it was.
Maybe it is.
It is. We're going to get a corking match at Money in the Bank, no doubt.
Mm. So if this was Jinder's big plan, and he's, you know, you're not really going to derail Roman Reigns by giving him Sunil Singh, as is what transpired when Reigns defeated Singh in seconds with a spear, 1, 2, 3. And then and I was like, okay, this is where Jinder attacks Roman and they do a big beatdown angle heading into Money in the Bank. But he doesn't. He hits one coloss, one of his finishing moves, and then goes away.
He left him laying, man.
Like, so all of this...
To leave him laying, he proved a point, I guess.
But it's not like Jinder has... But what is the point?
Which shows that Jinder can beat Roman if he hits his move.
But it doesn't, because it was blindsiding.
Yeah, but Sunil Singh will be there. Sunil Singh will be there causing a distraction on Sunday as well.
I thought this was so insanely weak and insipid
your
as an angle.
Again, your version is much better, where Jinder does a wicked beatdown on Roman to like properly leave him laying, so then Roman is going into Money in the Bank injured. Mm. But then that might be a storyline, and I don't think that's what WWE are going for.
Well, just look at this feud so far. Jinder... cost Roman that Money in the Bank spot. That's what started all of this a number of weeks ago. And then every week since then, it's been Roman finding Jinder and beating him up backstage. And 1 week, Roman wasn't even on TV. So Jinder has never been portrayed as an actual threat, not even from a cheating standpoint. And here was the time to do that. So I don't believe Jinder can beat Roman. I don't care about Jinder beating Roman or Roman beating Jinder. What possible reason is there to be invested in this feud?
Well, I said this on Saturday's video, where why is Raw so boring at the moment? Specifically looking at this match. Like, what does Roman get if he beats Jinder? And what does Jinder get if he beats Roman? Like, neither guy gains nothing from this match. Because it's not like the winner of this is going to be the new number one contender to the Universal Championship when Brock Lesnar returns at SummerSlam. Like, it's not even being built as that. It's just, it's a match. And you can do blood feuds without stipulations or without titles or anything like that. But that requires, like, a Tommaso Ciampa, Johnny Gargano feud. It doesn't really work with just these two lads.
Yeah, clues in the name. Blood. Blood has been drawn in a feud.
Yeah.
This is just a slight disagreement.
And it's like, you compare that, say, down in NXT, where you've got Ricochet and Velveteen Dream. They're having a match at TakeOver Chicago. There isn't a belt on the line, but both men are doing that to kind of, like, jockey for position in who should be the next number one contender. Mm. There is a point to that match. This match has no point, which is why it's difficult to get invested in.
That sums it up perfectly. It's a pointless feud.
Yes. It's something for them to do.
Maybe the creative team have just been like, okay, we really need to distract Vince with something. Let's book this and then we can... But it's not like the rest of Raw's improved with Vince distracted over there.
No, I guess the point of it was to get Roman cheered because people don't like Jinder. So by osmosis, you're booing Jinder, you're going to cheer Roman, I guess. That was the intention. It was like when they gave Roman the US Championship to make him the All-American Hero as a way to get him cheered.
Wow. And Roman just feels so weak. Not weak, but just not over.
It's because he's lost at WrestleMania and he's been flattened since then.
He's lost so much momentum. Yeah. And it's like, not that he ever had a babyface momentum, but he certainly had a kind of momentum about people disagreeing about him. Now it's just like, I just want him off. And yeah. It's a shame because he's a great wrestler and he's a good performer. Oh well.
Oh well.
B-Team beat Rhino and Heath Slater, making them look strong heading into their title match this weekend. They beat him very quickly, which made it the third squash match in a row.
I didn't even pick up on that, but yeah, it is.
And the Deleter of Worlds appeared at the top of the ramp afterwards.
Well, no, they were on the screen first.
Yes.
And said some words, and then they appeared on stage and said some more words, and then the segment ended.
Yeah, it wasn't a great promo. It was just like, it was just there, wasn't it?
Well, so again, tying back into, like, this is a pointless feud, Jinder and Roman, like, I feel like this is also a very pointless feud because it's not a feud. Like, these two haven't... The B team won a battle royal last week. This is the first time these two have actually interacted. And all it was the Deleter of Worlds saying stuff. Mm. And the stuff they would say in any promo. So it's nothing. Like, again, it's giving you no reason to care about the feud.
So I never saw this as a proper thing anyway. This is just a filler comedy feud for me, and I think it's doing it perfectly fine. It's not going to be a big payoff match. Probably go quite short. Don't expect a title change. And it is the payoff of actually, like, at least a month long running story of the B team forming and trying to get a title shot. So I don't mind it from that perspective. What I do mind is that it's on the pay-per-view card.
That's my point I was going to make.
This is one of those matches that you could just put on Raw, create kind of like a super show feel to the go-home Raws, which is what they really should do, especially now the pay-per-views are so crowded, them being co-branded. That rhymed quite well.
Hmm.
Why not have this match here?
I agree.
Saved 11 matches. It's going to be a long Sunday night.
Is it 11 matches now?
At the moment, yeah, I think.
What was the 11th one?
I can't remember.
Oh, no, it was... did they announce Almas versus... was that taking place on SmackDown? Almas and Sin Cara?
I don't know.
I can't
or is it Kalisto? Next up, we got probably the best segment of the night, actually. Elias is so over as a heel, and he had the crowd in the palm of his hand. Arkansas...
Yeah, and he sang a great song about Seth Rollins, pointing out something that the Kayfabe News had reported last week, which is that confusing architect tells people to burn it down.
Yeah. He also debuted a new guitar that he said he's going to debut once he's won the Intercontinental title at Sunday. And it's just this, it's a guitar with the IC title spray painted onto it. And it gave me very Rick Rude or Velveteen Dream vibes, yes, when he would paint his opponent's faces on his tights. So I liked that. And Elias was just so over as a heel and doing the John Mayer stuff. Coachman described him as a hip-hop legend.
Who? Elias or...
John Mayer.
You had to tell me who he was this morning because I had no idea.
I wouldn't describe him as a hip-hop person.
Okay. Is he a music man?
He's a music man, yeah. He's a guitar player.
Oh, is he? Okay.
Who dates a string of famous and beautiful women who he, you know, breaks up with eventually. What a Lothario.
Is he a solo man or is he part of a band?
I think he jams around.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool.
He's a jammer. But Seth Rollins comes out waiting until after this song about him is over.
Yeah.
So he's not that offended.
Like, I did like that Elias called him a tool in the song. Elias is great.
And Rollins comes out, he sort of throws Elias out the ring, and Seth's just cutting this promo saying, look, you're really, really good. You've got like all this charisma and stuff, and like, I just want you to use it for good, but you're not. You're being a little dick about it. And then he says, you've got all these guitars, and he looks at the guitar that's still in the ring. This was a really well-executed segment when the crowd like all realise at the same time. When I saw that guitar, I thought, that's getting broken next week. I didn't think that's getting broken in a bit.
Yeah, I thought it would be something that gets broken on Sunday at the pay-per-view.
And it was really well structured to make me want that guitar to be broken.
Yeah, I mean, I'd have liked to have savored that. You know, have Elias using it and, you know, I think proudly presenting it for sort of weeks on end, and then Seth breaks it, as opposed to just being like, here's a guitar, it's broken. Because I didn't have as much of impact as it possibly could have done. But I did think this was the best segment on the show.
It's a hot go-home angle, that's what it was.
It was spicy.
When Seth Rollins realises the guitar's there, he puts it in the middle and he's like, really milking the crowd for ages, Seth, saying, well, you know, I've got a song, you know the words, it's got those three beats, burn it down, burn it, and he just curb stomps. Curb stomping a guitar isn't as visually impressive as slamming the guitar on the ground.
No. But it's more in keeping.
Yeah. Because there was a bit where Seth Rollins said, you know, this is great that you've got this guitar from John Mayer. That's amazing, man. There's only one problem. And I thought he was going to say, I hate John Mayer, and then smash the guitar, which would have been so much cooler. But they didn't, because WWE like pop culture, don't they?
Is he pop culture, though?
Like, in America, he's a big deal.
Has he had a song recently?
I don't know. He's one of those guys that just seems to always be in the celebrity news bits.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah.
Man, you learned so much when you worked at 4 Music.
Hey, my knowledge stops at 2013, though. I can't tell you what he's done since, apart from break up with Katy Perry. Why? Next up, we had Kevin Owens approaching Bobby Roode backstage.
Yeah, and he gave him the same offer that he gave to Balor earlier in the night.
Then we had Ruby Riott taking on Bayley in a pretty decent match as well.
Well, before that, though, we got Riott and the rest of the Riott Squad causing all sorts of havoc backstage. I think they might have kicked a Coke can at one point.
Yeah, things really, really kicked off.
The cleaner had to spend an extra, like, at least 90 seconds sweeping all that up.
And they went up to a sort of stagehand and just cut his tie off.
Oh, man, that was a nice tie.
Wow, they are so rioty.
I have written here, they do all sorts of riot things. Mm.
I wish Ruby Riott didn't have Sarah Logan and Liv Morgan. Yeah, she's so good by herself.
I know, and I really like Sarah Logan, so I'd really like Sarah Logan to be off doing her own thing.
But that would make perfect sense, because Sarah Logan really does not fit gimmick.
No.
She needs to be the trapper. Trapping gay meat.
If you are interested in hearing more of Ollie's impersonation of Sarah Logan, You should definitely check out the Patreon exclusive podcast where we review Judgment Day 2000, because it's essentially the same as this Gerald Briscoe impersonation.
Mm. Oh, God damn it.
Mr. My
oh,
man.
I was going to get the coffee. Oh, what do you want? You wanted the game, mate? Oh, no, darn it. It's going to be cold.
It's wonderful.
So, they had a decent match. I've just written down here, though, this is a good match, but I don't care about it, because the Ruby Riott Bailey Sasha Banks series of matches is just tainted for me by that Bailey Banks never ending, never payoff feud.
Yeah, it feels like this is something that's going to like come into its own next month, I guess, after Money in the Bank is out of the way and Sasha Banks can start teaming with Bailey to take on the Riott Squad, I guess.
They've done that already!
I don't know, I'm guessing that's where they're going with this, because Riott, one, she gave her the Riott Kick, and then she did the most riotous thing of all. She drew on her. She got a big old Sharpie out and drew an R on her abs.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
Ronda Rousey and Nia Jax had a face-to-face next.
They certainly did. I liked that backstage Ronda was waiting to put on her jacket for the camera to find her, and then she flicked on her jacket and made her entrance.
Looking cool, and Natalia, always there with sage advice, don't take your eye off Nia. God, Natalia's so bad. She's really no good. And she's great, that's the problem.
Yeah.
But she's stuck with this role of, I don't know, what is it? Just like cardboard cutout best friend?
Well, I was going to say, it's her character that's the problem, really. Her character's so bad. Like, I've not watched Total Divas, but is she this bad of an actor on Total Divas?
She's more kind of sort of likeable. Yeah.
Yeah.
She's but like, a bit more
but
real.
Like, when they give her words to say on Total Divas, does it sound as like convoluted and scripted as it does here?
She's a different kind of bad to someone like Nia, though. Because Nia, when she's not on her A game, like, shortly, she just sounds wooden and disinterested. Natalia's, like, putting in quite a lot of effort, but she's just not good.
Okay.
So, yes, they got Coachman to be the master of ceremonies here, which I have to think is a rib on Coachman, considering his previous comments about Ronda Rousey, how she's done, she'll never draw anything ever again.
Well, no, I thought it was because he's got the ESPN connection, and like it makes it seem like he's seen as like a legitimate sports broadcast.
Sports.
You can tell that I watch them, sports. Watching all the sports, me. Sports broadcaster.
Yeah, I mean, if he did have that reputation, I think it's been slowly chipped away at with every passing week of commentary.
Yeah.
But I just thought, you've got a perfectly good Renee Young somewhere backstage.
Oh, she was busy getting ready for the Sami Zayn segment.
Yeah,
though.
She had to flip a coin. It's the most excitement she's had in months. Because like, it fits in with your women's narrative. And Renee Young's great.
Yeah.
And she could have really drawn out personality from these two stones here.
Problem was, though, that Renee's, like, her real skill, it's answering a question and then fading away into the background. But she was, like, Coachman was on a chair, which would have been very difficult for Renee then to fade off into the background.
But Coachman did do the same thing. He essentially said one question and then...
He didn't feel so good.
You heard the click and then... off into the ether. So, yeah, Nia Jax was... They were both sitting face-to-face in these chairs.
Side-to-side.
Side-to-side, yes. Like slightly us. Angled. And that Nia just... She sort of talked about how WWE is different because the UFC, you can't have headbutts, you can't have hair pulling, you can't have slaps. Pretty sure you can have slaps.
Yeah, or knees to the back, I think was one of the other ones.
Yeah,
you get.
Shots to the base of the spine.
Yeah.
And... I've never really bought into that stance of how Ronda's the underdog here.
No, especially because like UFC is legitimate fighting, and this isn't.
And
I
just
guess in a kayfabe world,
just the stuff at the end of the segment, I really enjoyed because whenever Ronda gets physical, it's actually like she's actually the best at it. But that is the only thing she's the best at in a wrestling context at the moment. She could improve. I thought just her general presence while Nia was speaking was completely lackluster, and Nia's performance as well was really wooden. And I hate it when women wrestlers feel the need or it's scripted for them, I guess, to say, hey, you're beautiful, you're strong, you're really talented. Like, beautiful shouldn't come into it. This is what, like, you should never, if you're really trying to push this equality thing, you drop the whole idea of women needing to be beautiful as a prerequisite for existing.
Yeah, when Paul Heyman was cutting promos on Roman Reigns prior to WrestleMania, he didn't go like, God, you're so handsome.
Your hair's amazing.
Your hair's luscious.
But you're going to lose to Brock Lesnar. I really, really hate it. Like you would never... It's a big problem because they always say when you're raising kids, when you praise the boy, you're like, oh, you're so smart, well done, you're really strong. But when you tend to praise girls, and I think it's just the default mindset, oh, you look so pretty.
You're not a princess.
You're a princess. And that's like, it's just going to condition them to seek that sort of reward out. Like, I've got to be pretty. I've got to be beautiful. When really you want to be like, no, you're smart. You're just as smart and strong. Not just as smart and strong, but, you know, that's what we're praising you for on those metrics. So I hate it when it's done by adults in a company that professes to push this kind of agenda themselves.
I agree.
But the physical stuff was good.
Physical stuff was awesome.
Arm bars are great.
Arm bars are great. I thought Nia actually did a really good sort of sell job on it. Mm. But it was like... So they stand up and they shake hands, and then Nia headbutts her. And then they get into this little scuffle, and then Ronda struggles to lock on the arm bar, and then she does. And Nia tapped out. And I did things like, oh, why did you do a tap out spot 6 days before their big match?
Mm.
Like, why would you... And then Cole says, like, that's the question we've had for weeks now. Can she get on the armbar? And I was like, no, it hasn't. That's not the question you've asked at all. Like, it's... I don't understand why they did Nia tapping.
Mm. Nia Jax doesn't look strong at the moment. Like, even... I know she squashed that jobber the other week, but, like, Nia felt a much bigger threat last year.
Mm-hmm.
In just the way she was dominating matches and throwing people around. I'm not really into this feud. I get why it was in front of the live audience, because the physicality at the end works best in that environment, I suppose. But why not do all the other bits pre-taped?
Like the AJ Nakamura contract signing?
Yeah, a bit like that. Or more just like a sports package thing where you can put in dramatic music.
Yeah.
Or...
I mean, to be honest, like, this either live or pre-taped didn't really bother me. It's Nia tapping out, I thought, was idiotic.
After this, we got one of the better surprises of the show.
I was actually saying this might have been my favourite segment of the show, actually. Yeah. I loved this.
So, No Way Jose and Curt Hawkins have a match. They've built up that Curt Hawkins is now on 200 losses. This will be his 201st if he doesn't turn things around. And No Way Jose has his weird thing down to the ring. He gets into the ring, and they're waiting for Curt Hawkins to enter. And the music's played. It's played for a while. Referee Rudy Charles, best referee in WWE, says, okay, well, I'm just going to start counting him out then. One, two, and he gets to, like, the four count. One of the weird sex party entourage runs in and attacks Jose from behind. I did not see that coming. Great.
Great stuff. Really, really good. And then to cap off and even, like, to make it even better, Jose just turned around, lamped him in the face and pinned him.
Mm.
Awesome. Loved that.
Yeah, so hopefully they can do this every week and find new fun ways for Curt Hawkins to nearly win.
Yeah.
Then we got Balor and Bobby talking backstage, saying they don't trust Kevin Owens, but they don't really trust each other either.
No.
Ooh. And then a really sweet Special Olympics video package with the Big Show. Not that he's in the Special Olympics. It was a girl. But he's kind of like their ambassador.
Do you want to take any issues with this, Ollie? Like,
no,
you
this was
do?
Nice. No, I liked the previous week. I just wanted it to work into an angle.
I'm messing.
Hopefully, Big Show and the girl who was deadlifting in the Special Olympics thing here, probably the new tag team champions at SummerSlam.
Hey, could be. Stranger things have happened.
Then we got... That's a good show. Then we got Bobby Roode. I've written Bobby Roode. It's not, is it? It's Bobby Lashley and Sami Zayn.
I hope you edited that in the script.
I did. The latest chapter in their thing. This thing that they've been having week to week.
In all fairness to them, this has been one of, I'd say maybe one match, maybe one of two matches that are going into Money in the Bank that actually has had a storyline.
Mm.
It's not a good one. But it has had a storyline with weeks of progression to lead to the pay-per-view match. to credit where, you know, yeah, to give yeah, credit, yeah. It has had that.
I'm conflicted about this because I hate it, but I enjoyed this.
You enjoyed this one?
Mm.
So, okay, so
it's cognitive dissonance. I don't know how to articulate
and
it.
And I did groan and roll my eyes a little bit because you saw the guys coming down and they were setting up an obstacle course around ringside. No, I had these flashbacks to NXT when they did the first season of that. And then they're putting over the, hey, Sami Zayn is going to make Bobby Lashley run an obstacle course. And Sami Zayn comes out and cuts a promo and he says, last week I made reference to I don't think that Bobby Lashley was ever in the army and people booed me. But hey, you've all shown me pictures and documents, but I can't verify those. So I've set up an obstacle course for Bobby to do. And he takes you around there. It's like a rubbish version of the Broken Skull Challenge. Like, and which is one of my favourite shows on TV. And he kind of walks around and kind of shows you everything that it is. He says, like, now in the military, it takes people about 2 minutes to do this. Me, I did it in 90 seconds, which I thought was a wonderful line. And you can tell it's military because it's got mesh on it.
Mm.
And then he gets, and then he says that he's going to win, and then he's going to dedicate his victory to a great military power, Canada. Which I thought was also great.
Especially with recent frictions between the leaders of those countries.
Yes. Just to get some nice little cheap heat in there and just like, Canada! Hey, just so you know, at the end of the segment, you need to chant USA.
Mm.
Just to remind you.
And even that there were three jumps of escalating difficulty, and each jump, or wall to climb over rather, was named after one of Bobby's sisters.
Yeah, so it really was like Broken Skull Challenge.
Yeah, and which did get a chuggle from me, and the timer on the Titantron had a cutout of Sergeant Slaughter up there.
Yep.
So, like, this is the thing. I enjoyed this. And then Bobby Roode comes out. Sami Zayn.
Bobby Lashley.
Oh, I did it again! Bobby Lashley comes out. Another smiling guy comes out. The smile thing is so, so generic, I can't even see race anymore. And Sami Zayn really milks it and says, you know, you start on mine and you start on my count, not your count. Rene, flip the coin. I'm not getting close to Bobby because look what he did last time. He hurt my hand. And that was all enjoyable. And then when Bobby did the actual assault course, I was like, it's quite impressive to watch a man be that fast and strong.
Yeah, he did it like 42 seconds.
With flourishes.
Yeah.
Because he didn't use his legs to climb the rope. And when he gets to the end of the monkey bars, he sort of does a pull-up as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Look really cool. And on the last wall to climb over, there was a rope. He doesn't use it. He just, like, jumps.
Just jumps, yeah.
Jumps over.
Jumped over it.
That said, though, as enjoyable as those bits were, and Sami Zayn's performance, because he really is good, even though the material he's working with is awful, it's an obstacle course segment.
I know,
like, this is the go-home angle for your feud. And why would Bobby Lashley agree to do this obstacle course? And when last week, I was like, at the end of their segment, that was a crap segment. But there was a little glimmer of hope at the end where Sammy accused Bobby of never being in the military. And it got a genuine, ooh, reaction from the crowd. That was gold. Do that bit more. And I guess you did do that bit more. You just did it in a stupid pro wrestling way that doesn't make me believe anything.
Yeah.
And it's just like the amount of people this segment had to go through. The amount of people had to go, yeah, let's do that. Just to get all the stuff to the ring and get the obstacle course bits of equipment made. Why didn't anyone say no?
No, and again, in the kayfabe sense, like, why did Bobby even entertain this? Like, they always say that when you're being bullied, like, you just ignore what the bully is doing. You don't go out and be like, oh, if a bully sets up you an obstacle course, I don't then go like, oh, I'm now going to do this obstacle course and prove them wrong.
Yeah.
No, like, no thanks, because I just get the feeling you're going to beat me up afterwards.
Or one of them's going to be faulty.
Yeah, exactly, because you've done this to make me look like an idiot. And you do that enough as it is. So, like, it was great to see him do the course in 42 seconds, very impressive. But at the same time, like, in a kayfabe sense, it made no sense.
Yeah, yeah, so...
Boring feud.
And then, and Sammy attacks Bobby after he completes it really quickly, in half the time that Sammy claimed to have done it. And then it just fizzles out. Like, it was just a double axe handle to the back. From Sammy on Lashley.
Quite the double axe handle though, wasn't it?
And then, yeah, and then the segment ended.
Crowd did chant USA though, so, you know, mission accomplished.
They, You just need to give them a hint of the red, white, and blue, and they'll start chanting USA.
So, but you know, the segment ended hotly with the crowd chanting USA. So it worked in a sense.
And then we got the main event, which we've already spoken about. So, overall thoughts on Raw?
Yeah. What did you give it?
I gave it average in
the
end.
Yeah, that's pretty well, I would have said. Because, 3 out of 5.
Like, I actually enjoyed the 2 4-ways.
Yeah.
There was the great, really good Elias Seth Rollins segment. I really liked the Kurt Hawkins bit. The obstacle course didn't offend me as much as I thought it would do. When they started promoting it earlier in the night, I was like, oh my God, it's happening. They made it worse. But it was actually passable. It's kind of like when Lana and Naomi had that dance off and you're like, oh God, why did they even bother? And then you're like, that wasn't bad.
But I suppose the question is, Oliver Davis, and I think you have brought this up previously, that I thought the show was 3 out of 5. I'd have given it an average as well. But it's a go-home show for a pay-per-view. Does that not then knock it down? Because, like, did any of these segments make you excited for Money in the Bank?
Mm. Yeah, as a go-home show, it didn't make me more excited for Money in the Bank this weekend. So in that purpose, it has failed. You're right. And it's not just a pay-per-view. It's now one of WWE's big 5 pay-per-views.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I thought, I went into this show thinking I was going to hate everything because of the quality of wrestling we've watched over the last week with Dominion and Best of the Super Juniors. And it wasn't bad. And like, it, my very low bar was vaulted over Bobby Lashley style.
Yeah.
So
it was a strong shrug of the shoulders. Mm. It was fine.
On another week, if I was in another mood, it could have been poor. So it was, yeah. That's what it is.
Could have been. So before we do anything about the Aperol Spritz of big events, tell us about your 10K run, man. How did you do?
Oh my God, I forgot I had to talk about this. Oh, okay.
I was going to say, when we sat down and you were like, yeah, in the outro, we'll just do reviews. I was like, oh, Ollie. Oh, you naive fool. We've got so much to talk about.
I kind of blocked this out of my head. So I did a 10K on Saturday because I'm training for the marathon next year. Not the marathon, a marathon next year. And this was my first 10K. I've only ever run 5K before, and that was only very recently. So I thought, that wasn't too bad. I'm going to go to the next level. And it was round my local wetlands. It was at 9 a.m. start. I was at the place for 8:45, ready and raring to go. I had my running playlist sorted.
Not meditation.
I decided I'd do that when I'm a bit more comfortable at running that kind of distance. And yeah, off we were. And it was a nice temperature. I didn't know how much temperature affects me, but it was quite humid on the 5K, and I was dripping sweat on people, because I sweat so much, if I run with my arms back and forward, that kind of creates a what would seem like a superpower of spraying salty water at people.
Because you have quite hairy arms.
Mm.
So I'd imagine it catches a lot of sweat, like in the little tips.
Yeah.
And then the motion of that would send it off.
If you look at a treadmill after I've been on it, the wall in front of it will also be covered in spray. Yes.
Well, when we go to the gym later, I will look out for
that. Yeah, yeah. I'm going to spray everywhere. And
think I've seen that film.
So it was a cooler day, and that was to my benefit. And I ran, and I was fine. I was actually largely okay. I wasn't pelting it. I don't really know about pace yet. I haven't looked into that. But I was running a bit beyond being comfortable. So I was happy with it. And then I did one lap. I did a second lap. And then it's the third lap time. There's the arrow that says third lap, finish this way. I take it, and just before me it said 8.5 kilometres. So I'd already, you know, run that far. And then all of a sudden, there's 9.5 kilometres. I've only got 500 more to go. Get in. I feel fine. And I run round. I run through the bit where it checks off your time, the electronic tag on your foot, and everyone's clapping. And I'm like, yes. That wasn't that bad at all. And then someone comes up to me, one of the organisers, and goes, congratulations, you came 8th.
Whoa!
And I was like, and that's when the panic set in. Because that was my first ever 10K. And I thought I did good. But I did not do 8th.
How many people were there?
100.
Whoa, man.
And a lot of them were quite competent runners. Just from the look of the gear, I'm a novice. I've only been doing this for a month. And I just like, everyone's there like tapping me on the back. But my stomach, as soon as she says 8th, I get the knot. And I'm a kid again. And I'm like, oh no, I've done something wrong. And I just kind of like, ah, cheers, thanks. I feel like I'm going to poo myself. And I walk into the corner outside, and I just sit down and I think, that's not right. But then there's another voice going, hey, maybe you ran a good race, maybe this is beginner's luck, you know. And I'm thinking, this isn't right. That 8 kilometers to 9.5 happened real fast, and I noticed it. But you know, I was pretty tired.
You're in the zone.
Yeah, I wasn't thinking, oh, that, because you know, the 6 to 7 kilometer thing seemed to go quite fast, but that's just because I was phased out. Yeah. And then I finally stood up and I asked the organizer, I think I've missed out a section of the course. And he went, you too. And I went, what do you mean? So, oh, someone else has just missed it as well. I said, which bit? So I missed out half a lap.
Oh.
On the third lap, you're not meant to turn right to the finish line. You're meant to turn left and do half a lap of what you'd the previous two and then go to the finish line.
Awkwardly laid out.
But very clearly explained. Like, it was as soon, like, because he looked at me and went, did you not listen at the briefing? And I, which was quite an arsey thing to say.
I was going to say, that sounds like quite accusatory.
Yeah, yeah. And I was like, I did, but it's one thing to listen in the briefing. It's another 8 kilometres and rather sweaty in.
Oh, totally. Like, yeah. When we went kayaking out in Dubrovnik, obviously I didn't do that because I was in a cupboard, but had I done that, they gave us quite like a detailed proof of like, this is the best way to do a kayak. This is the best way to do it. And I suddenly was like, yep, totally. I get that 100%. Until I got out into the kayak and I was like, no, I don't think I listened at all.
What are my arms?
I don't think I actually know what I'm doing.
Yeah, so that's what happened. I came 8th. Good news. Bad news is I only ran 8.6 kilometres.
That's still pretty good, though. That's still pretty far.
So it's still okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. For my first time, I'm quite happy with that.
Well, congratulations.
Thanks, man.
That's pretty good.
I've got a long time till the marathon. I'm starting early, so
yeah,
and I can make these mistakes.
And if you want some more ego stroking, my wife loved your poem.
She
thought it was excellent.
Thank God I said that out loud.
Yeah, she said it was excellent.
Oh, that's very kind of her. Thank you. Yeah. If anyone else wants to tell me how good my poem was, because no one has. Like, I thought if I shared it on the podcast, we might get a bit of correspondence, a bit of tweets.
I thought we would as well, man.
I've had zero.
Yeah, I've
shared my soul.
I haven't had anything either. Mm. In fact, I've had just that Aperol Spritz email about people just wanting to talk about the Aperol Spritz event.
Yeah, so it's great to hear that went down so well. I think people are just still recovering from it. You know, I didn't know while he had that side to him.
No, they've got to listen to it like 5 more times to really get into the meat of what you were saying. But I enjoyed the Aperol Spritz event. Moving on from that, I thought it was jolly good. Although I think I said to you and your lovely lady partner when we got there, I'm just not cool enough to be here.
That was my concern. It was an event very much geared towards the grams. No one was talking to each other. We went there to just have a drink and chat and be in the sun and see all this fun Aperol-themed bits.
Yeah.
But everyone else was there to film boomerang-style shots on their phone.
I learnt what a boomerang
yeah,
was.
Yeah, I only know because Anna's into the gram. She loves the gram.
She loves the gram. She did, when she explained it to me, it was almost like she was kind of telling me off for not knowing.
It's a looping gif. Let's call it what it is. And yeah, so no, hardly anyone else was talking to each other, I noticed.
Yeah.
So I thought, we might not be cool in that sense of the word, but I don't want to be that cool. Actually, that's a lie. I'd kill to be that cool. Everyone was dressed so well.
I know, right?
What are they doing different to us?
I don't know. I think it's because they've all got good hair. That's what I think it is.
I don't think it's that simple, because there was a guy with a big bald patch on his head. He looked cooler than us. Mm. It's like everyone else is in HD and we're walking around in standard definition.
Yeah.
I don't... Is it a spray? Do people put a spray on them before they go out?
Maybe it's just... I think they're probably all locals, because this was like in, you know, quite like hipstery area of London, like surrounded by cool people and cool places. So maybe it's just like when you live there, like, it just becomes part of you. But when you live like me out in West London, where like the closest thing to me is a retirement home, then you just sort of, you don't get that edge of cool.
I think it's cod liver oil.
Is that what you think it is?
Yeah, might be. Well, that's all we've got time for in today's intro and outro.
Yeah, we've got some
outro rather.
We have got some other big things to record today. So we can't even do any iTunes reviews because we had to talk about other things.
But we'll be back tomorrow for the SmackDown review, the Go Home Money in the Bank SmackDown. I've got high hopes, actually. Looks to be a good show.
Yep.
Jeff Hardy versus Nakamura.
And we've got a big cast. Not big cast. Daniel Bryan versus Shelton Benjamin.
Hey ho. How about that for a match
and
you never thought would happen?
Paige holding the women's summit. Remember that?
Yeah. I mean, I hope it's all on ladders.
I was about to say, it better be all up on ladders. But we'll see you tomorrow. I love you. Goodbye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.